Thank you so much, Ruburi. Tremendous akaros tov to you for all the extraordinary things that you do. Real pleasure and supposed to join you all today. I assume you're all suffering from Zoom-itis, like the rest of the world. You guys are probably Zooming a tremendous amount. My objective for today is maybe you guys can unmute for a second, see if we can some of you can speak up. I'm not sure if we'll be able to do it because Baruch Shem, it's a nice group of people. But we're going to talk a little bit about the current coronavirus, something which has impacted not only all of our lives but literally changed the world irrevocably over the past few months. My objective is to give you guys a different type of perspective—a perspective that you have not received. I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, have seen at least Rav Schechter's tshuvos on Corona. There are other Gedolei HaPoskim throughout the world that are paskening on the issue of Corona as well. But what I'm going to do is give you a perspective which is not often voiced in this contemporary era. And that's an appreciation of the fact that there is precedent, there is history to our community addressing pandemics, addressing disease throughout many, many centuries. And I think and hope you'll find it fascinating that there's some pretty remarkable parallels between how we are addressing this contemporary coronavirus pandemic and how our predecessors, Gedolim and Gedolei HaPoskim, addressed some of these issues in the past. And so the general outline for today is as follows. I'm going to share with you a section one will be parallels between the contemporary coronavirus and the pandemics of the past in terms of how the Jewish community and poskim have dealt with these halachic issues. Section number two will be on a brief overview of some of the contemporary medical issues related to the coronavirus pandemic. Of course, there are many, many issues that are not specifically medically related, but we're going to focus on two or three medical issues. And section number three, if we have time today, will be a review of the unique medical aspects of previous pandemics. And each pandemic has actually created unique halachic issues depending on the nature of the disease and the impact of the disease on the human body. And on particular individuals that actually created unique halachic issues. So I'm going to open up the chat on the side. So feel free to chat any questions. I can't promise I'll get to all of them. But if you have any questions, and you can also unmute and interrupt. I'm not into formality. So for sure, if there's something that I'm saying that requires clarification, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to unmute and ask those questions. So I'm actually going to share my screen with you for this PowerPoint. It's very there's a lot of fascinating makoros on this PowerPoint. I will be delighted to share with you this PowerPoint. I'll send it to Ruburi to give to you guys, so you don't have to worry. You don't have to write anything down. If you see a great source that you want to remember, don't worry, I'll send it off to you. You can all have access to it. Also, I just want to reinforce, in case I forget to do so later, it would be my absolute pleasure going forward, you know, to help any of you if you're interested in matters of medical halacha, or as he said about giving shiurim and you need makoros. My goal, actually, in the near-term goal, is to develop a website which is a one-stop shop for all matters related to Judaism and medicine, including the Makoros and medical halacha and the relationship of the Jews and medicine throughout the centuries. It's probably about a 3 to 5 year goal that I've started working on. So Mirtzah Hashem, you guys will be able to benefit from that in the future. So I'm going to open up this PowerPoint this morning. You guys can see this. Make sure you can all see this. Yeah, I see some nodding heads over here. Great. Okay. So the title of today's talk is Precedented Times, and it's not a misprint, the rabbinic response to pandemics throughout the ages. And the one word, that you have heard incessantly throughout this pandemic, it's hard to believe it's only a few months' time, seems like much, much longer than that, is that these are unprecedented times. And indeed, there are significant dimensions of today's pandemic which are unprecedented. We'll highlight some of those. We, however, are going to focus on the fact that there is much about today's pandemic, especially with respect to the way the Jewish community has responded to pandemics throughout the centuries, which is actually precedented. So that's what our focus is going to be, at least the first section of our talk today. But in terms of the unprecedented dimension, here you're looking at the COVID-19 dashboard from Johns Hopkins University. This is what I use to monitor how the pandemic is progressing. And you can see the world map in front of you, and you see a lot of redder areas of COVID-19 infection. This is actually, if you look at the bottom here, this is from last night, 7-2 yesterday evening. Almost 11 million people confirmed. Unfortunately, tragically, 520,000 deaths from this global pandemic. This number is not unprecedented. There have been pandemics which have tragically caused much, much greater loss of life. So this is nowhere near unprecedented. This 520,000, nowhere near unprecedented. There are many pandemics that have caused tens of millions of lives to be lost. What is unprecedented about this is the rapidity of the spread globally throughout the world in a very short period of time. That is something which has never happened. Never before in history has a disease spread so rapidly throughout the entire globe. What is unprecedented, and from our perspective, and from your perspective specifically, being future poskim, future rabbonim, leading communities, having Mirtz Hashem, you should never have to address another pandemic in your lifetimes, and it has been over 100 years in this country since we had a pandemic of this magnitude. The one which you I'm sure have heard referenced incessantly is the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. That was the most recent one in this country. We are sort of America-centric. There have been pandemics in many other countries throughout the world during this past century. We are just protected from them by virtue of our hygiene, by virtue of our vaccination, and a whole host of other reasons. But what has been unprecedented is what you see before you, and these are the materials that I sent for you. And I assume you all read everything since it was sent out last night. You read all the packets of some 400 pages of tshuvas about Corona. What's unprecedented is that in the past times, if you had a pandemic in the 15th century, 16th century, 18th century, most assuredly, Gedolei HaPoskim were addressing issues related to the pandemic, and we'll see some of those Piskei Halacha today. But if you were an average citizen and you weren't the recipient of the psak, you would unlikely know any of these Piskei Halacha until you may not know ever that they were paskind. Or maybe you might know later when the Shalos and Tshuvos started by these poskim were published, and even then they were part of Sifrei Shalos and Tshuvos buried in hundreds of Shalos about other issues. You'd have a couple of Shalos about a pandemic. So it was a different world, and the transmission of information is very different today, and it's really quite remarkable. And it's from your perspective, being able to see the evolution of Piskei Halacha by Gedolei HaPoskim literally in real time. Literally the moments after these Piskei Halacha are rendered and committed to writing, they're already posted on the internet, and on YU Torah every day you'd have additional Piskei Corona. So you have Rav Schechter Shlita, you have Rav Asher Weiss Shlita on the right hand side, Mechas Asher. If you looked at your handout, at the attachment, and you opened it up, you'd see Mahadura Tinyona, which is the second edition. But actually, if you proceed farther along the document, I added the Mahadura Tlita, which is the third edition, which is an appendix to the second edition in your attached document. So he's already in the third edition of that. Rabbi Dr. Avram Steinberg. For those of you who are not familiar with him, you should all be familiar with him. He is really the the iconic figure of contemporary medical halacha. He's written the Sfarim on medical halacha. His classic work is Encyclopedia Hilchatit Rifuit, which was went through two editions, was translated into English as the Encyclopedia of Jewish Medical Ethics, and his more recent work, which is probably better for you guys than the encyclopedia, is Rifuah Kehilchasa. And those of you who don't have it, and if you're looking for a one volume sefer reference on all matters relating to medical halacha, I strongly urge you to get it at the next forum sale. It's Rifuah Kehilchasa. And even that's being translated into English. I don't know how long it's going to be till that comes out in the English edition. Just also a heads up, and maybe I can jot a note to remind myself. This Sunday there is a Zoom with Rabbi Dr. Steinberg and Gedolei HaPoskim. It just says Gedolei HaPoskim, so I don't know who this Gedolei HaPoskim happened to be. On coronavirus is a Zoom Sunday morning, which for those of you who have time and are interested in this topic, most assuredly will be an extremely worthwhile endeavor. So I'm going to just jot a note to myself to email Rabbi Orlian a little later, and feel free to remind me if I don't. So this dimension is, and Rabbi Rimon also, for those who are not familiar with Rabbi Rimon in the bottom right, he is also writing extensively. So our ability to see these in real time is really exciting from our perspective, for those of us who are interested in the world of halacha and to see how halacha evolves. An interesting study would be to compare, you don't always have that luxury too in real time, and there are those who have started to do this, to compare the different approaches between the Piskei Halacha, for example, of the Minchas Asher and the Piskei Korona of Rav Schechter, and you'll see there are some differences in the way they approach things, and people have begun to start to analyze that. But that'll be more for down the road when we Mirz Hashem get out of this actual pandemic. So what we're going to do in section one of our session today is the following. You see on the left side, Piskei Korona, rabbinic responses to the coronavirus pandemic. We are going to, in this next session, we're going to highlight very briefly contemporary Piskei Halacha and pandemic, or contemporary issues that affect us in the pandemic. And you see, somebody in their hazmat suit. This happens to be me, actually. It's a picture of me in my hazmat suit. I work at Montefiore Medical Center. Montefiore Medical Center is a major medical center here in New York. We have seen so far, we have discharged so far close to 6,000 patients with coronavirus. That's discharged 6,000. That doesn't include the ones that were not admitted. We saw many thousands of patients that were not admitted, and I work in the emergency department. I saw so many hundreds of corona patients over the period of time. And actually, just on a personal note, I actually contracted coronavirus from working in the emergency department around the end of March, beginning of April. It was a very stressful time for me, and it's one of the issues that I was dealing with, which we'll talk about in section two. On a personal note, not just a theoretical note, is before I contracted corona was, you know, should I be working in an emergency room where the likelihood of me contracting corona would be very high? And is it usher for me to do to expose myself to that risk? Am I mechuyev to do it because I'm a physician? Are physicians unique in their obligation to expose themselves to risk? That's something we'll discuss a little bit in section two. Baruch Hashem, as you can see, I recovered from the coronavirus, and actually one of the things that we're not going to be discussing today is the Piskei Halacha, but I availed myself of one of the Piskei Halacha of Rav Schechter, who said that to use, you need a minyan for benching gomel, and obviously have a minyan, regular minyan for tefillah for Zoom, you know, people didn't agree to, but for Schechter has a unique psak that just for Birchas HaGomel, because the nature of Birchas HaGomel is, it's not a Dover Shebekdusha, the nature of Birchas HaGomel, the requirement for Minyan from Birchas HaGomel, is to be Mefarsim the Nase, that you recovered. So he said, with respect to that, the Zoom should be absolutely fine. There should be no reason why you shouldn't be able to have a Zoom minion for Birchas Hakdoma. So I actually availed myself of his psak, and I benched Gomel through a Zoom. So on the right side, you will find the plague physician. So we're going to contrast the contemporary with the past. And again, I think you'll hopefully be impressed by how many parallels there are between the past and the present. And this even this gown, this outfit, is not dissimilar to the contemporary physician's hazmat. Covering the head, covering the whole body, gloves, long gown to not get exposed to disease. This beak, by the way, for those of you who are unfamiliar, the reason for the beak is because these physicians would have to go into areas where the smell was profoundly putrid, if you will. And it was very challenging for physicians to walk into areas of plague because of rotting flesh. Rotting flesh could be, by the way, on the living as well as on those who have died. So they actually placed in this little beak sweet substances, honey and myrrh and things maybe which you find in the Ketores, which we'll talk about as related to the plague also in just a few moments, in order to just simply allow them to breathe. And not to pass out from the fumes. Just to give you an idea of the of a schematic of plagues throughout the centuries, the plagues go back millennia. This is the 165 to 180, the famous Antonine Plague. Plagues which you are assuredly familiar with, a Black Death, 1300s. We're not talking about the Black Death today, but there are people who have written about the Jews, history of the Jews and the Black Death. Great Plague of London, which we may mention today. Smallpox will definitely be mentioning. The Italian plague we'll mention, and cholera pandemics. Now I want you to take a look at this cholera pandemics. Cholera pandemics. There were six cholera pandemics between 1817 and 1923, and each one of them lasted for many years, sometimes a few decades for each pandemic. Spanish flu, and those of you, you know, in the more modern era, you'll recognize these. Obviously, AIDS is one of these chronic pandemics, which is still ongoing. Swine flu, SARS, you may be familiar with Ebola, MERS, and now prominently placed on this list is COVID-19. Again, do I have, you know, apologize if my chat, I don't know if you guys have been chatting over here. So Shiloh was, does Refuah Kol Chasa include psychological conditions? Yes, it does. It's not a primary feature of it, but it certainly addresses psychological dimensions of halacha. And we'll actually, there's a reference in our upcoming slides that you will want, which references a lot of the works that relate to mental health and halacha as well. Coronavirus was declared a pandemic not that long ago. It was March 11th, seems like an eternity ago. There are specific definitions as to what is a pandemic versus an epidemic. So an epidemic generally refers to disease which is restricted to a geographical area. Pandemic is when it goes beyond a local geographic area and spreads to other countries. So clearly this was declared an international pandemic on March 11th, and it's spread very widely. You can look at the map that you see here. Obviously, the map is, there's a lot more red on this map today than there was then. So it's really spread quite rapidly over a relatively short period of time. Are there precedents, or is there a precedent for the concept of declaring a pandemic, if you will, or a certain spread of disease in halacha? So the answer is yes. And this you guys might have seen. Some of these have been floating around in this current pandemic. So some of these will probably be very familiar to you. So this is from Maseches Tainis. V'chein ir sheyesh bo dever o mapolas. If the city is afflicted with dever, which comes from the makos, is colloquially used as plague. It doesn't refer to a specific disease. It refers to the spread of a disease, to plague. It's not an identified disease per se. So what happens if you reach a threshold of plague? Oso ir misano masra. So that city has to fast and blow shofar. So the Gemara asks, ezo dever. So the Gemara also says we need a definition of what constitutes plague. or pandemic, if you will, is the modern analog. There would be epidemic, to be technically correct. Ir hamotzia chamesh meos ragli, if a city has enough that they would produce 500 soldiers. V'yatzu mimena shlosha meisim b'shlosha yomim zeachar zeh, and you have three, there's different ways of interpreting this. Rashi says there's one death on three consecutive days, at least one death from this particular disease. Hareza dever, you've reached the threshold of dever, you activate the pandemic protocol, which is fasting and tkios. So that would be reaching the threshold. Pachos mikan, ein zedever. Less, if you don't have this threshold, you haven't identified it, so to speak, as a pandemic, it's not considered dever, you wouldn't activate the pandemic protocols associated. Sheltering in place, something that we've all, a phrase that we're all familiar with in this era. Is there precedent for the concept of sheltering in place in Chazal or in the way they dealt with pandemics? The answer is certainly yes. This actually is from the Gemara in Bava Kamma says, Tonu Rabbanan Dever Bo'ir Kanes Raglecha, another source which is probably familiar with you. If there's a plague in the city, Kanes Raglecha means stay at home. Don't go out. And people have invoked this phrase throughout history. Poskim have invoked this phrase in terms of suggestions to their communities about what to do during plague. But there is not an absolute consensus about whether Kanes Raglecha is the appropriate thing to do. Some recommend leaving the city during the times of plague. And I'm just going to mention this here. This is a much broader subject that we're not going to get into. But clearly, understanding of contagion and spread of disease is very different today than it was in the pre-modern era. So when you're reading sources from pre-modern times that deal with disease and deal with understanding of contagion, they didn't understand bacteriology, virology. Those are products really of the 19th century. But they did understand that disease was spread. That's clear. They understood contagion, the concepts of contagion. And they acted accordingly based on their perceptions of contagion. One of the major understandings of contagion was that disease was carried through putrid air. And it was called miasma. That's why some recommended leaving the area, because the very air that you were in was afflicted with disease and was transmitting the disease. So maybe fleeing is better than kanes raglecha. So that was part of the thinking. And by the way, when you look in Makoros in Chazal or in Middle Age literature and beyond, you will see the expression ipush ha'avir. Ipush avir means putrid air, and that refers to their perception of transmission of disease. So what this is Ramah. What did the Ramah write? Ramah wrote, "Od kosvu sheyesh livroach mino yer kishadever boyer." If there's plague in the city, you leave, you flee. Not kanes reglecha, as the Gemara says. V'yesh latseis mino yer betchilas adever velo besofa. V'chol elo advarim he mishum sakona v'shomer nafsho yerchak mehem v'asu lismoch anes olasake nafsho v'chol kayotzi v'zeh. V'yen v'chol shen mishpat tochav zayin. So there are those, by the way, who tried to be miyashiv the Ramah with the Kanes Raglecha, and they said, you know, Kanes Raglecha is if you're already in the midst of the plague, but if, you know, you should really flee before the plague. So to people that try and be miyashiv the Ramah with the Gemara. But be that as it may, the Ramah clearly says you should optimally flee if that is an option. And in fact, the Ramah himself, in his introduction to a sefer called Mechir Yain, which is on Megillas Esther, he writes that he fled, so he practiced what he preached. He goes, "Ani Moshe ben Kavod Abba Mary Hapinis Amani Yisrael Shlita Aniker Moshe Yisraelus Mikrako Hayisi Besocha Gola, etc." Machmas Ipusha Avir. So that I mentioned to you, the putrefying air, the spread of disease. Hayinugarim Baritz Lolanu Beir Shidlov. So because of plague, I Rav Moshe Yisraelus had to leave, and I went to the city of Shidlov. So obviously it was very difficult in this place that he had fled to. And he actually writes further that he wasn't able to send proper shalach manas to his father-in-law in the absence of any material objects and sustenance in his place where he had fled. So in lieu of Shalach Manos, he actually wrote this Sefer Mechir Yayin, and he sent it to his father-in-law instead. Wearing a mask is something which Wearing a mask is something that obviously we've all become familiar with. Something many of you, I mean, I've been wearing masks all my adult life in the practice of medicine. It's an integral part of our practice, but not wearing masks all day, every day, which we are required to do these days in the emergency room. And you see here a mask developed by an Israeli, of course, which has a little opening in the middle of the mask. And this is a handheld remote control. So you can wear the mask and open the center of the mask and be able to eat at the same time that you have your mask on. So that's a nice patent from Israel. So that is the situation with masks today. And many countries are struggling with the requirement to wear masks. Is there a precedent for mask wearing in the rabbinic literature? So there's one precedent from the remote past, and there's a more recent precedent which we'll come to on the next slide. But here you have an allusion to the concept of mask in Tzaraas. And we'll see some other slide or two in a few moments. We're relating to Tzaraas as well. What is the al safam ya'ateh? How is it translated? And he shall cover over his upper lip. So the Ibn Ezra writes, the al safam lamala miha safa, the atam, shelo yazik beruach piv, that he shouldn't spread disease through contagion, which is an interesting aspect. Now, something which you may ask me is that, we thought that Tzaraas was really a spiritual disease. Was Tzaraas really a medical disease? Was Tzaraas contagious? So those are things that that Rishonim and Achronim discuss. But here, in that vein of being possibly a contagious disease, Ibn Ezra says the reason you should wear a mask, so to speak, is shelo yazik b'ruach piv. He shouldn't cause a disease, spread disease via contagion through his mouth. This is a more contemporary issue about masks. Hilchas Tisha B'Av, the Mishnah Berurah in Bir Halacha writes about fasting. Ideally, if you are in a time of pandemic, I mean, here he's talking about cholera specifically, which was prevalent in the 19th century, then you shouldn't fast. But umishi yirtzel hisanos, b'makom she'en amachle b'zam chas chalila. So if someone does want to fast, ideally you shouldn't leave his house the entire day. However, but if he does want to leave, camphor is a waxy like substance material with a potent smell, which was used from the Middle Ages. From the Black Death, was believed to have powers to protect one from the plague, and umat esev miyote, and some sort of other medicinal thing, some type of grass which would protect him. And this interesting story about Rav Kanievsky, who says madim magish biyoter man rabbeinu. So I'll translate this in the interest of time. Someone went into Rav Chaim Kanievsky shlita and said, and saw him wearing a mask, and they said, Rebbe, are you wearing a mask because the government said we need to wear a mask? So he says, of course not. I'm wearing a mask because the Mishnah Berurah says you have to wear a mask. So that's why I'm wearing a mask. So he was someich on the Mishnah Berurah that you have to wear a mask. Coronavirus and isolation. So I'm going to be mechalic here between isolation and quarantine, even though people sort of conflate the two. I'm going to separate them because they are technically different. Isolation is used to separate people infected with the virus, so they're already infected, to isolate them from people who are not infected. So that's the purpose of isolation. Is there precedent for isolation? So here again, I turn to an ancient source of isolation. That's back to the Tzeruah. kol yimei asher hanega bo yitma tamehu badad yeshev michutz lamachane. Badad yeshev michutz lamachane moshavo. Sorry about that. Badad yeshev, and the Das Kenny Mibalatosos writes, badad yeshev, why? Why does he have to sit alone in isolation, literally? Because this disease, he has a contagious disease, according to this approach, his tzaras is contagious, so therefore you should he should stay away from other people, not to afflict them or infect them with his particular disease. Just an interesting interesting tangent for a moment. I'll go off screen for a second. Interesting historical tangent. The disease tzaras. I don't know if I were to ask you, you know, what is the disease tzaras? I suspect most of you would say tzaras is leprosy. But in fact, tzaras is not leprosy. The reason, it's a very interesting, curious reason why tzaras has been associated with leprosy. And tzaras, by the way, has been associated with leprosy for thousands of years. Even the Rishonim and Acharonim associate tzaras with leprosy, and it has halachic ramifications in terms of marriage, in terms of getting these kinds of issues. But the reason why tzaras is associated with leprosy is for the following reason. When the Torah was translated into Greek, the Targum HaShivim by Ptolemy, in the roughly second century before the Common Era, the Targum HaShivim translates tzaras as lepros. The Greek translation of tzaras is lepros. Lepros just means skin disease. It's a generic skin disease in Greek. Later on in history, there was a specific disease called leprosy, and the disease was named because of the Greek word lepros, and that disease is a capital L, leprosy. That disease has absolutely nothing to do with the Torah's tzaras, nothing. But because it was called leprosy, and lepros was associated with tzaras, throughout the centuries, it was always associated with tzaras. And if you look at the description of the disease that afflicts the human, the clothing in a house, tzaras doesn't afflict, it's a non-starter already at that point. Tzaras doesn't afflict the clothing, tzaras doesn't afflict the house. There are other, you know, for another time, there are other viable candidates for what indeed tzaras might be, but it's surely not leprosy. To return to our slides, isolation and the Lazaretto. So was there isolation in the history of the Jews and disease? The answer is most certainly yes. And here I introduce a fascinating work called Olam Hafuch. This is a manuscript of this work, which this happens to be in Columbia Library. It was written in the 1600s. It was written by a Jewish physician whose name was Avraham Catalano. Olam Hafuch, the world in upheaval. And he wrote it because he was responsible as a physician and a leader of the community in Padua, northern Italy. He was responsible for taking care of the plague, the Jewish community during the times of the plague in 1631. And he wrote, we in the Jewish community began to build our own lazaretto. What's a lazaretto? A lazaretto is an isolation house. And by the way, the very etymology of lazaretto might actually be related to tzaras, some related to Lazarus, which is a Christian figure. There are others who related to tzaras because it used to be houses for lepers and diseased persons. There's also like isolation houses called lazarettos associated with tzaras even. So in any case, he was responsible for the community, and they had to build houses of isolation. They were called lazarettos. Lazaretto is a term that you will find in the tshuva literature, and we'll highlight some of the interesting tshuvas that relate to the use of the lazarettos in our discussion today. Quarantine. Quarantine is different than isolation. Quarantine is used to keep someone who might have been exposed to COVID-19 away from others. Quarantine helps prevent spread of disease that can occur before a person knows they are sick or if they are infected with the virus without feeling symptoms. So many of you probably have been forced to go into quarantine for exposures, traveling. Now the requirements, Israel to transfer all travelers from abroad to quarantine facilities. that's still a requirement. My son just came back from travel, and they, some of the people, depending on where they were from, had to be quarantined. In those days, by the way, in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, that was mandatory quarantine. It was enforced by police. Today, these are voluntary quarantines. You have to agree to stay in your own house. Is there precedent for quarantine? So the answer is yes. And here we turn again to Olam Hafuch by Avram Catalano. He writes in his Olam Hafuch, Az Chala Emmanuel Bono Hasfardi Batirea Buba Bua Achare Azno. So this is called the bubonic plague, and these were called bubos, these special lesions which appeared, purplish, large swellings, which appeared in different parts of the body, often in the thigh, sometimes in other parts of the body. So he was diagnosed, this fellow was diagnosed with having bubonic plague, and Eliyahu Francisi went to aid him, to assist him, to be like a nurse for him. And Emmanuel Bono Vayomas HaSfardi Ahu Vayisager HaMishmeres, when the Sfardi died, when the person who had the disease died, this Emmanuel Bono, so his Mishares, Francisi, had to be quarantined. Az Chosa Eishes Menachem Inkin. By the way, Avram Catalano mentions the name of every person who was afflicted with the disease on a daily basis in the ghetto. The ghetto is a small community. There's 600-700 people in the ghetto. So he, of Padua. Thomas Gamhi, Vayisgeru, Kol Bnei Beisa, and he talks about quarantining also in this situation. There have been a number of tefillos written. Someone asked me, where did the Reb Chaim story come from? I have a reference that I can send you, the reference to Reb Chaim. Tefillos. So there have been a lot of tefillos. These are just two of the tefillos. So the one thing I want to highlight for you in these tefillos is the following. The tefillah Atziras HaMageifa, Pitum HaKtoris. This is an Italian tefillah. The Italian tefillah adds the tefillah, usually a number of tehillim, and adds Pitum HaKtoris. Question is, what does Pitum HaKtoris have to do with all these tefillos? You will find almost invariably in all the tefillos that are written for Mageifa, you find Pitum HaKtoris. And here is some tefillos which were composed over the period of time, and they were composed. This one is composed for Dever. We don't know what that might have been. This one is composed Tikkun L'Chole HaKalara. This is Shmira L'Mageifa, etc., etc. They include, by the way, in the bottom right, you see an example here. They include Avinu Malkeinu, Atzor Mageifa Minachal Asecha. So we read Avinu Malkeinu every year and fast days and Aseres Mechuvah. We sort of ignore the phrases of Avinu Malkeinu that relate to Mageifa. They in the early period of times were very familiar with these things because they experienced Mageifa time and time again. And you'll notice that there's a separate Avinu Malkeinu for Mageifa, and there's a separate Avinu Malkeinu for Shlach Refuah Shleima L'Chalei Amecha. So for standard illness is one Avinu Malkeinu, but for Mageifa is a separate issue because Mageifa was a serious issue in those days, and there's a separate Bakasha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to protect you from Mageifa. Here also from the Italy in the 1700s, Pitum HaKtoris for Tefillah for the Mageifa. And for those of you who are not familiar, the obvious reason that Pitum HaKtoris is being used for Mageifa comes from Parshas Korach, last week's Parsha. Vayomer Hashem, Vayomer Moshe Aaron. So there was a Mageifa after the Korach rebellion. And Moshe said to Aaron, Taches HaMachto V'Seinu La'esh Me'al HaMizbeach V'Sim Ketores. So he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, so someone wrote here, many shuls have been saying Avinu Malkeinu. When should one stop saying it? So it's a good kasha. I mean, the community Rabbanim really should decide when the Mageifa is technically over and they should stop saying it. Probably we're still in the midst of the Mageifa. It's not unreasonable to continue saying Avinu Malkeinu. So why do we say the Ketores? We say the Ketores because Aaron brought the Ketores in the midst of the Machane, which is something obviously neged halacha, because the Ketores has to stay, be brought only within the Mishkan. But what happened as a result? that Teatzara Magefa was successful. So Ktoris was successful in stopping the Magefa. So in perpetuity since that time, the Jewish communities have associated Ktoris with a potential cure for Magefa. And that is something that that continues to this very day. And many of the tefillos say, in addition to whatever tefillos are written, they add, make sure you say the Pita Maktoris. And I will tell you on a personal note that I used to say Pita Maktoris a lot. I didn't say it every single day. But when I got sick with the coronavirus, I started saying Pita Maktoris every day. And it could be that that was what was matzil me. Who knows? But I said Pita Maktoris in the midst of my recent illness. Closing houses of worship. Obviously, we all are familiar with the fact that these shuls have all been closed throughout the world. That's unprecedented. There's never been a time in Jewish history where Jewish communities throughout the globe, with maybe a handful of exceptions, literally have shut down. That's something which, fortunately, we've never had before. It's a shame we should never experience. But the question is there precedent to closing shuls? So the answer is there is precedent, and here you have some examples of that. This is Shmuel Yehuda Katz Nelbogen, who's the son of the Maharal Padua, wrote in a sefer in the 1500s a hesped that he gave. And just Derech Agav, he writes, Hesped Asisi B'chatzer Haget. This particular hesped, I delivered at the entryway, or in the courtyard of the ghetto, for the Sagaon Marina of Zalman Katz Mantua, which is a city in Italy. Why? Ki kol bate knesios hayusugurim mipnei hamagefa, because all the shuls were closed. So I couldn't give a hesped in the shul. I had to give a hesped in the courtyard. There was no alternative. And this plague in 1576 killed 50,000 people just in Venice. Almost a third of the population of people died in that particular plague. But you'll see not all communities abided by closing synagogues. So in the Great Plague of London in 1665, roughly around the same period of time, same source of plague, even at the height of the Great Plague, Anglo-Jewry kept its synagogues open. But here you have another example of, this is a remarkable example. This is from Otzer HaChaim, and I'll go off screen for a second. I'm going to show you. This is the sefer that I'm about to quote from. This is the original copy of the sefer. This is from 1670s. This book was published. Otzer HaChaim. It's written by Yaakov Tzahalon. Somebody actually asked about mental health, an interesting tangent about the fact that mental health has been getting a bum rap even in the previous centuries. This sefer is a medical sefer written in Hebrew by this Yaakov Tzahalon, who is a physician trained in Rome and a tremendous darshan and rav in Rome. He was such a great darshan that even people from the non-Jewish community, the priests from the local area, used to come and listen to his drushes on Shabbos. So he wrote this sefer. It was supposed to have 13 chapters. The 13th chapter was on mental health, Refuas HaNefesh, Chuli HaNefesh. He didn't have enough money. So what ended up getting cut out? You guessed it. The 13th chapter got dropped off. So you see chapter 13 in the table of contents. Choli HaNefesh, Drushim Ruchaniim al Choli HaNefesh. But if you go through the book, it stops at chapter 12. There's no chapter 13 because they couldn't afford it. So there are budgetary problems for mental health even back in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. So what does he say? He has some remarkable discussions about the plague. He lived and functioned as a physician in the midst of the plague, the Italian plague in 1656. And he writes in his sefer that since the people were unable to come to shul on Shabbos Parshas Toldos, 2nd of Kislev, 5417, which is November 18th, 1656, I, Yaakov Tzahalon, delivered a sermon at the corner of Catalani Street from the window of the home of David Gottini, and the congregation stood in the street below to listen. On another occasion, I delivered a sermon on Tuscany Street from the window of the home of Yehuda Bottini, who was assumedly a relative. This, by the way, is a map of what Rome looked like in 1642. I couldn't find the corner of Bottini Street on that map, but interesting nonetheless. Tzahalon also describes the other restrictions, and I think you'll recognize some of these. It was not permitted for anyone to leave their homes except to visit a physician. At designated times, people were allowed to leave to obtain food. At night, no one was allowed out of their homes. And if they were found on the streets, they would be placed in a prison within the ghetto. But the punishment was much more severe for the next violation. People could not congregate. They couldn't get together. You know, our government says groups of 10 in shul or groups of 25 for weddings or 50 for weddings. This was Rome in the 1600s. People could not congregate. A gallows was built near the gate of the ghetto to punish those who violated this rule. They would hang people who violated the rule of congregating inappropriately. And this is actually a picture of what the ghetto looked like in that period of time. This is the gate of the ghetto. It's a little difficult to see, but this is the actual gallows. This is the gallows of the ghetto. And Rahman al-Islam, the people would be hung if they didn't abide by those rulings. Participating in the minyan. I'm sure you guys have all studied the sugya of the balcony minyanim. Can you participate in balcony minyanim? If Shechter has the shita, he's not a big fan of these balcony minyanim. Other posting are a little more permissive. People have a desire to be mispalel and minyan. And if they're stuck in these isolation, how can they do so? So one option is for people in an apartment building to stay on their own balcony, or people in their on a block in a suburb where there's plenty of space. People stay on their own property and their own houses and be mitzvah for minyan. So these are shalos about hitzarfus for minyanim. Is there any precedent in the previous times to shalos of being mitzvah for minyan? So here I mentioned the Lazaretto. This is one of the Lazaretto shalos. It's a shaila of the to the Chida in his Machzik Bracha. So Chida wrote, "Belazaretto, shenoagim ba'arim ha'el, im yesh beis kisos sham." There's two groups of people. She'einim yecholim ligazebaze. They can't physically be in the same room. The yeshisha bebayis achas, the arba bebayis acher, and they hem chalukim bemisparam kimishpat. So what was the shaila? The shaila was, you got 10 people, but four in one house and six are in another. The four in the one house are in a lazaretto. Lazaretto is a house of people afflicted with plague. They cannot leave their house. They cannot physically be mitzvahed with the others, but they can see each other. The houses are adjoining the courtyards. They can see each other through the courtyard. Are they allowed to be mitzvahed? So he actually paskin that indeed they could be mitzarif. I don't know how he paskin in today's shaila, but he said that they indeed could be mitzarif for a minyan in this particular case. Shuls and social distancing. So we're now back to shuls, but we have to socially distance in shuls. We have to stay separate. Here's a picture of the kotel. This is actually Birchas Kohanim for must have been Pesach, I think. And is there any precedent for social distancing in halachic literature in the past? The answer is yes, and there is precedent for informal social distancing and formal social distancing. And here's an example of informal social distancing. So returning to Avram Kadlano's Olam Hafuch, what did he write? He write, "Oz gazarnu al kol asher enenu nasui lisyatsev lispal al chutz l'beis haknesses." So they wanted to keep people a little farther apart. Now, they didn't have the six-foot rule, and they didn't, like I said, understand the exact disease transmission. They didn't know the distance of a cough or a sneeze, how far the particles would move. But they knew that you have to separate. So they said, an easy distinction is people that are unmarried, eino nasui, they would stand in the courtyard for davening, you know, outside the shul. The chutz l'beis knesses Ashkenazim, outside the Ashkenazi shul. The Italkim and the Italkim had their own shul in Padua, but everybody davened together because there were so few people that were able to come to shul. So everybody was mitzarif in one shul. The Italkim b'mokam hanoshim l'ha'amid b'merchav ragli mispalim. So and the Italkim would be in the women's section, the Ezra's Noshim. Why l'ha'amid b'merchav ragli mispalim? In order to distance, to separate, to socially distance. That was the effect. By the way, I don't know if any of you have ever been to Padua. I've actually been to Padua. The Beis HaKnesses Ashkenazim today was converted into a Jewish museum. So the Jewish museum that you would visit if you tour Padua is actually this exact shul that Avram Catalano, literally the same building that Avram Catalano is referring to at that time. And the Italki, the Beis HaKnesses Italkim, is literally just down the block, a few yards down. And he commented, this Avram Catalano, I mentioned this because it's just such a tragic association, but he said that they started out with social distancing, but after a period of time, read it on the bottom here, the Gam Ozra'inu Haba'im Lispalo Beis HaKnesses, after a period of time, so many people died that there just weren't that many people coming to shul at all. He named Atim, Uberov Hayamim Kasher Gadal Hadever, Berobu Hamugofim, We didn't have a minion for many days. Vayhi mikdash me'at. So he used the term mikdash me'at, which we is usually referred as a Beis HaKnesses itself is a microcosm of the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan. So he says mikdash me'at. He uses it in a different way. You know, shomein mibli bay moed. So he said mikdash me'at. It was just desolate. There was simply fewer people there. And he writes, so yeah, suli famim, some people, sometimes they had a minion, uvigi araba, they had to work very hard to get it, and even when they did get a minion, it was a haphazard davening. You know, it wasn't an ordered davening. And there, the minhag was important to them because they had different minhag. He may be familiar with the Ksavak Kabbalah. Ksavak Kabbalah by Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. And the source for this actually is an auction item, so I don't have the exact reference for this. I just know it through the auction item. But in 1857, he was also concerned in times of Magepha, and he signed a document that said that the women shouldn't come to shul on Yom Kippur, and instead should daven at home so as not to spread infectious disease. Those are sort of informal. This is a very formal discussion of social distancing. This is also a source which has been spread widely in this past few months within the Jewish community and on the Jewish websites. And the source comes from Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger wrote a number of letters. This is a letter of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. This is not printed in his halachic works. Although it might be actually, there's some dimensions of this, I think, which may be included in his Perush on Shas, but this is a separate letter. And he writes, in my view, it is true that gathering in a small space is inappropriate. He's talking about davening now, social distancing and davening. But it is possible to pray in groups, each one very small, about 15 people altogether. The groups should begin with light, meaning it nates, or maybe alos ha-shachar, and then there should be another group, sequential groups. Each one of these separate groups should have a designated time to come and pray there. And he even mentions they should be careful that more people than the aforementioned quota should not push their way into the shul, perhaps by using a guard to police to oversee this. So this is a very, very reminiscent of exactly what we're doing today. And this is how Keith Eger decided to do things back in the 1800s for a cholera pandemic. Another mechanism for deciding on how people come to shul is using a hagrala, using a lottery. So, for example, on Shavuos, people wanted to daven at the Kotel. They couldn't accommodate the masses that they could normally accommodate. So the state of Israel decided they're going to have a lottery. People are going to pick. And based on a lottery, they'll decide who will have the schus of coming to daven at the Kotel for Shavuos. Is there a precedent for a lottery? So the answer is yes, Rabbi Akiva Eiger. In another letter, dealing with the Yomim Noraim, used this exact mechanism in order to determine who would go to shul. And here, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, with the rest of the Beis Din of Posen in Poland, made the following remarkable recommendations, which are very reminiscent of the recommendations which we might be invoking literally almost verbatim today in anticipation of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Only half the seats should be occupied. A lottery should determine who attends Rosh Hashanah and who attends on Yom Kippur. So he said, usually the shul is full. So if you're filling only half the seats, then half the people won't be able to come Rosh Hashanah, and half the people won't be able to come Yom Kippur. So he said, we'll make a lottery. And those who pick A will be able to come the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Those who pick B will be able to come on Yom Kippur. By the way, one seat wouldn't be the required 6 feet today, so it'd be a little different based on our understanding of contagion. Davening for Rosh Hashanah should be limited to 5 hours, no recitation of piyutim, no additional aliyahs. A chazan should not dreitzach with chazanis. I'm sure people would like this all year round, not necessarily just during times of megefa. But these are recommendations which, and by the way, the poskim today are literally looking to this exact letter for inspiration and how to address some of these issues today. Mezuzah was another issue which one of the first piskei halacha, and little did they know that there'd be a lot more required than just this, was that in times of corona, you shouldn't kiss the mezuzah, not with your mouth, not with your hand, because of the concern of contagion. Were there any shailas about mezuzah in the pre-modern era? So not exactly similar to that, but this returns us to the Lazaretto. This is another Lazaretto tshuva by the Chidah. In this, a different sefer of the Chidah, in Chaim Sha'al. And he was asked the shaila, the Lazaretto is a place where you go when you're afflicted with disease. Let's say you went into a Lazaretto and there's no mezuzah in the house. Are you mechuyev to put a mezuzah in the Lazaretto? So he asked the shaila. He was asked the shaila. So his answer was that technically you don't need a mezuzah till unless you're there for 30 days. But let's say you're there for more than 30 days. Let's say you're sick and your sickness persists for 60 days. Are you required to put a mezuzah? So he said no. You know why not? Because by definition, the Lazaretto is a diras aroi. It is not intended for diras keva. It's only intended to be a temporary house. You're never really intended to be there for a prolonged period of time. Eruv, by the way, a separate issue, he said you would be required to put an Eruv. I'm going to skip through some of these. Here I want to focus, because one of the questions is on psychological issues. This is one psak of Shechter Shlita, using psychological aspects incorporated into his psak, and it's the question of whether you could listen to music during Sfira. As a minhag, so obviously that would be different if it's a minhag or a chiyuv, but the rabbanon or the raisa, but here it happens to be a minhag. So laws of Sfira, say we all know you don't listen to music during Sfira. So he wrote, during this time of global suffering, it would appear that for some individuals, refraining from listening or playing music may leave one in a state of sadness or emotional distress. This would appear to reach beyond the intent of the restriction. So he's incorporating emotional issues. Just on a personal note, I remember when I was in isolation for a prolonged period of time during my illness, and one of the things which was matzil me was the ability to put my earphones in and to listen to music. There were times where I was mamish completely distraught. I couldn't, the concept of going through a Shabbos for me without being able to listen to music to distract me from my illness was a big concern for me. So I completely relate to this psak. This I recommend for those of you interested in not only how mental health is incorporated into COVID-19, but in general. This is from Lehrhaus from June 18th, 2020. You can find this online. Again, I'm going to share my slideshow with you so you can have all this information for yourselves. And they also highlighted a few aspects of a piskei halacha and corona that related to psychological aspects. Schechter ruled that the family of someone quarantined over Yom Tov who suffers from depression or mental illness and whose physicians worry that spending Yom Tov without speaking to family puts him at risk for suicide may and even must telephone or leave the internet open for him. There are those who discussed using Zoom seders. That's the psak which got people got a lot of flack for that psak, but this is obviously very specific. If someone's at risk for suicide, Rechman al-Litzlan, someone can use the telephone or use media in order to be able to access these people on Yontif. Another is psychological. This is not Rav Shechter, these are just different piskei halacha. women who expressed concern regarding the safety of the mikveh. So poskim issued rulings to make mikvahs safer, to ease women's anxiety. Frame of mind and easing tension are central to Rav Asher's tshuva, permitting a husband to drive his wife to the hospital on Shabbos when she is in labor during COVID, et cetera, et cetera. So this article has a lot of wonderful material, not just about COVID, but references to the interrelationship of Piskei Halacha and mental health in general. How is mental health in the previous generations impacted? So this is a fascinating tshuva, which Dr. Ari Greenspan brought to my attention from Chaim Palachi. And it talks about gambling. And he writes, Hineni gozer gezerah d'oraisa b'koach ha-Torah shelo yuchal shum adam asher b'shem chacham yechune, someone who is known as a chacham, lischok b'kubya, to gamble, b'shum zman. And lo b'purim, lo b'chol moed, lo b'chupos, lo b'kfarim, b'shum makom, b'shum zman. Except, what's the exception? Zulas im yechas shalom chole, o im yecholi ba'ir chas shalom kemagefas cholera. Beis mem, when you see a magefa, is bar minan. Cholera bar minan is an expression like nothing else we've seen, so to speak. So that beis mem you'll see often after magefa bar minan, or holy bar minan, etc.
Is this tshuva regarding gambling or only playing games without betting money on it?
Oh, good question. That's a really good question. It seems to imply, you're right, it may only be just playing games, not even betting money. It doesn't really say specifically betting money. But the truth is the assumption, lischot bekuvia, I think when that is mentioned, the assumption there, and when the poskim talk about being misachek bekuvia, it's usually a betting game. I think kuvia might be sort of definitionally a betting kind of gambling game. So I think, even though you're right, it doesn't explicitly say money, I think the assumption is that it is a money issue. But your point is well taken. May not be. But I my guess would be that it's referring to the misachek bekuvia in a gambling sort of way. Harbe is very fearful of libo doegalav vayideshi schok into koras ruach, and through gambling he would find some kind of peace of mind or achieve some sort of kamla suche daite as a distraction, etc. It's a very interesting psak. I'm sure that you probably could find other ways to alleviate your suffering. But I mentioned here in that vein, the autobiography of Yehuda Aryeh de Modena. Yehuda Aryeh de Modena was a Renaissance Rav in Venice, a very controversial figure, but he was known to be a compulsive gambler. He wrote tshuvos about gambling. If you're looking up gambling, if you ever do a shiur on gambling in halacha, this is one of the classic sources, is Yehuda Aryeh de Modena. So he was a compulsive gambler. And he actually writes that in the times of the plague, he went back to gambling. So he had stopped his gambling, and the plague actually had a negative effect for him. So he returned to his gambling addiction during the time of the plague. So he would not, his psak should not have applied, the Palachi's psak should not have applied to him. Biker Cholim is another area where Piskei Halacha, this comes from one of the Sfarim that I sent you in your email, Yad Beramim, but all the others pass in the same way. Basically, Ein Levakir Chola Nimtzo B'Bidud. You can't visit someone who's in isolation because of the concern about you contracting the disease. In this case, the disease was corona. Is there precedent to the concern about risk of Biker Cholim? The answer is most certainly in the previous era. This is a manual, Takonos Shel B'nei HaChavura de Biker Cholim from Berlin in 1750. And here they write, Gam kibalnu aleinu levaker kol choli chutz im yebo chas ha-sholem eizu choli she'enu shchiach. So we have a chiyuv as members of the Biker Cholim Society to visit everybody who has an illness, except for diseases, shiroi l'harchik mimenu, rachmanu l'tzlan, except for if they have contagious diseases. So you don't have a chiyuv to visit them. What are those contagious diseases? Choli shul shul me'ayim, deber, rachmana litzlan, al elu ne'amar b'chai bohem, v'lo she'yemus bohem. And what are others that I pulled out here? Pakin. Does anyone know what pakin might be referring to?
Pox.
Chicken pox?
Pox.
So not chicken pox, good guess. Chicken pox is a pox disease, but smallpox. It refers to smallpox. And I don't. And I apologize. I don't think we're going to have too much time to get to a lot of, but I'll definitely, you'll see in the slides that I share with you, we have an extensive discussion about smallpox, which was the first disease for which vaccination was developed. And smallpox was a very, very fatal disease in the pre-modern era. We talked about, 350,000 people, was it, that have died from this particular pandemic? The number of people that died from smallpox, and you'll see a slide later on, hundreds of millions in, over the course of a century died of this smallpox disease before vaccination was developed. And this is a mem, it didn't reproduce so well. This is mazalin. This is measles. This is back in the 1700s. They had no chiyuv to visit for people who had measles. Now, just a year ago, literally, we were dealing in this Jewish community with measles, and we thought measles was such a big deal, and we were worried about the spread of measles. Little did we know that, you know, within the year, we'd be seeing something far more fatal, far more tragic than measles. Minyan, the physician, and contagion. Is the physician contagious? Does the physician have to be concerned? So here, this is a tshuva from Rav Asher Weiss, the Shlita. About the staff, that if you're a physician and you're treating COVID patients, like I was in the hospital, and we used to have a minion in the hospital, should I go straight from the ER and try and chap a mincha? So his answer is absolutely categorically not, because you are potentially contagious. The last thing in the world you want to do is go to shul, because you're such a tzaddik, you want to go to minyan. Meanwhile, you're going to infect others with COVID, and you're going to, you know, cause rachmana litzlan fatalities. Same shiloh was asked in the 19th century, during a pandemic then. Nishmas kol chai. Nishalti b'mei chorfi mikadmoni yachi beis ha-knesses. Shehaya rofei cholim, who was mana magefa. He was a plague doctor. Again, here you see Bez Mem is Bar Minan. So if you see, next time you'll see a Magefa, a cholera, you see Bar Minan. Haya Rofe le Negafim be Magefa, who wrote so li kanes be Vesa Knesses. Vahayachidim akvim be yado, shaloli kanes shem, yureim shem yisnag fu be nogea ilav. So he goes into shul, he comes to daven, and he sets down his tefillin, and the other people said, you know, they run up to the rabbi, say, Rabbi, this guy's a plague doctor. He literally just came from the house of plague. He's walking into shul, he's potentially contagious. He shouldn't be davening here. And the answer was right. You're absolutely right. He should not be davening here. And that was the psak. Now we're reaching towards the end of life. The amount of loss of life and the multitude of deaths over a relatively short period of time completely overwhelmed the funeral services, funeral homes here in this area. It's really, really tragic. And they literally, some hospitals rented vans, refrigerated vans outside the hospitals where they had to put the bodies because, you know, some hospitals had so many deaths over a short period of time. I mean, I remember just about a week ago, I was in the ER. In the ER, we of course had rachmanos on deaths, but not that many in each shift, because we would usually put the people on the respirator, and many people were able to at least save for at least short periods of time. But when they were transferred up to the floor, there are people that would be on the floor for weeks or months. Staying, and I was having conversation with the resident who was in charge of codes at that time of cardiac arrests in the hospital. So he went to every single cardiac arrest in the hospital, and he said on his shift, which started at 11 p.m. and ended at 7 a.m., he had 26 cardiac arrests, and not one survived, not one single survived. And this is an issue which we're not going to have time to talk about today. It will maybe briefly mention towards the end. But part of the issue, which he commented on, and we talk about mental health, treating in this environment and dealing with this kind of tremendous loss of life, requires someone to be concerned about their impact on their mental health. So he said in many of the codes, people were not rushing to perform the cardiac arrest because they were exposing themselves to corona. So people had to dress appropriately, and some people were very hesitant to do chest compressions, to do intubations, to be near the mouth where the disease would be spread. So it was a very challenging and a very very difficult time for all those practicing medicine. The fact that they had to deal with burials and Rahman al-Islam and many at a time is reflected in an interesting hagdama to a sefer. And there's a very interesting sefer. I refer you to this article, very interesting article rather, Midever Ba'ofel Yahaloch, written by Avram Ya'ari, Sfarim Shenizchabru B'Shas HaMageifa, Sfarim that were written in times of Mageifa. And it's a fascinating article. I have a copy of it. Again, for those of you who are interested, please feel free to email me. And in the introduction to this book published by Yosef Ibn Verga, who was actually the son of Shlomo Ibn Verga, for those of you who are familiar with the chronicle, historical chronicle Shevet Yehuda. So this man, he lost his son to the plague, and he writes, this is the English translation, my English translation, I, the bereft and embittered Yosef Ibn Verga, compiled this small volume in the year of a plague. Both the printers and I were overwhelmed and harried every day going back and forth to attend to the burial of the dead. I therefore shortened a number of sections I had in my heart to write. I also realized there will be mistakes due to the prevailing great fear and panic. And this is the Sefer. There's a copy of the Sefer, Sheris Yosef. Another issue with burials and presents serious halachic issues is cremation. In some areas, not all, very few actually ended up Lamaisa, but in Bucharest, they wanted to cremate the bodies to avoid contagion of the body. So the Jewish community received a psak to allow them to bury on Shabbos in order to prevent the bodies from being cremated. And this is, I believe this is a psak from Rav Schechter. It says, due to the highly contagious nature of coronavirus, there are certain governments that have mandated either immediate burial or cremation. Under those circumstances, every effort should be made to avoid cremation. Therefore, if a Jew would pass away on Shabbos, the burial should be done immediately. But obviously by goyim should do the burial. And he writes, the storage facilities of many funeral homes in New York are currently filled to capacity and have raised concerns regarding the upcoming Yom Tov. Under these tragic circumstances, we must allow that the burial be performed on Yom Tov. Relatives who wish to participate would not be permitted to walk beyond the tchum, nor would they be allowed to accompany the hearse in a car. And additionally, halachic shaila is about adding, it's called quicklime. Here you see they're pouring disinfectant into the coffin. And does that disinfectant can sometimes affect the decomposition of the body? And the poskim in the past generations discuss those issues. So here, is there precedent to these issues of burial? Obviously, there is precedent to these issues in previous times past. This is from Shlos Yaakov. In time of plague in 1643, is decreed by the government that one who died from plague could not be buried in a Jewish cemetery unless the body was treated with quicklime to hasten the decomposition, like that last slide that you wrote. And why is this an issue for us? Because treating with quicklime hastens the decomposition of the body. The decomposition of the body accomplishes kapara for someone after his death. So if the kapara takes place in a faster way, maybe he doesn't achieve a complete kapara. And also there's a shaila whether there's pain, post-mortem pain. Kasha rima lemeis kemachat bebasar achai. There's a shaila whether people can actually experience pain during these issues. So another fascinating halachic issues. This is another psak by Rav Schechter, Shlita. Many people were buried, but they weren't buried where they wanted to be buried. So people have a plot in Eretz Yisrael. They're buried, they die, Rachman Litzlan, during the pandemic. You can't get to Eretz Yisrael. You can't fly there. No planes. What do you do? So obviously you have to bury locally. So can they exhume the body and rebury? So Shechter Paskin, this is an open Psak Halacha. A family who is currently unable to use their burial plot in Eretz Yisrael may perform a temporary burial in Chutz Laretz. And when the situation permits, the body may be disinterred and moved to Eretz Yisrael, as is indicated clearly in the Shulchan Aruch. And this is a Tshuva Chassam Sofer. Same issue, reburial after the pandemic. In those days, they had special cemeteries that were designated for cholera. There's actually an entire cemetery in Poland called the Cholera Cemetery. It's now been built over. You wouldn't be able to visit it, but the location of it is known. And the Chassam Sofer passed in the same day. Same thing. You're allowed to exhume. Just an interesting shaila here. This, by the way, was not uncommon. Exhuming and reburying was not uncommon in pre-modern eras for the following reasons. People would if someone died a far distance from where they lived, let's say they went for business and they traveled months to travel and they died at that location. So the question is, what do you do? In old times, there was no plane to fly someone back for an immediate burial. So they had to be buried locally. And how, because if you traveled on a horse and buggy, the body would decompose along the way and that would be prohibitive. It's a nivel ames and it's not appropriate. So what do? They buried the body there. How long do they wait in order to rebury? So usually it would wait for a relatively long period of time until the body would decompose, until just the atzamos would be left. And those were shilas also that were asked, can you put seed, samach yadalit, quicklime on the body to hasten the decomposition of the body so that they can rebury quicker? So those were where these shilas were asked. So in many cases, they would be mefana the atzamos, they would exhume the bones, and they bring the bones back to the family burial plot, and they bury it there. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch talks about, and the Poskim talk about likud atzamos. And they put those bones in a bone box, which is called an ossuary. And for those of you who are familiar with archaeology, archaeologists have discovered a number of ossuaries over the centuries. Some of them have interesting names on it. So the brother of Yashka, apparently, they found his ossuary. It's a debate whether it's fraudulent, whether it's real or it's not real, but that's the side issue. But from a halachic perspective, when they did likud atzamos, they'd have to sit a day shiva during that likud atzamos. So what Shechter didn't discuss, but I assume the answer would be that when you mefana the mace to switch to a new location, you probably have to sit a day of shiva at that subsequent time. And just to return, which I think is all we're going to have time for today, for our last discussion, that's the issue of Avelis and how this pandemic has impacted Avelis. So you guys are relatively young, but I suspect that at least some of you have had the need to pay a shiva visit to someone who's lost a relative. You may have lost a relative yourselves. Tragically, many, many people in the Jewish community have been nifter during this pandemic. And you have been exposed to what is now called the Zoom Shiva visit, which people will write about. It's interesting. You know, I found actually some interesting positive aspects to the Zoom Shiva. Of course, it's not the same as being in person. But be that as it may, it's completely overhauled the experience of Shiva in the 21st century. People aren't able to have minyanim in their shiva houses. So the question is, how do they deal with avelus in times of plague prior to the 21st century in the absence of Zoom? So the answer is, it's discussed explicitly in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh omrim, b'shas ha-dever, ein mis'ablin. There's no avelus, zero. No Zoom shiva, no avelus, nothing. Yishum bi'asusa. Because of Biasusa. What's Biasusa? Biasusa is because of fear. We'll discuss in a moment what exactly that fear is. Shamati k'tzas no'agu kein. And I've heard that people are knowing this way. There's mamish no avelus in times of plague. So Dibur Malkiel discusses this, and he has very interesting, he declares two chakiras, two ha'aras in terms of what the svara is for fear. What's Biasusa? So this gets back to the mental health issue. So one is not a mental health issue. One is the biasus of the fear is that let me go off this for a second. So it's a two-pronged fear. One is the fear of contagion. If someone's coming to your house and you're not sick, you're going to get afflicted with a disease, or the Menachemim are going to get afflicted with disease. So that's one potential fear. But he says that's not what he thinks the Svar B'Yasusa is. He thinks the Svar B'Yasusa is as follows. He said, if you're in a small town and you get a notice that from the Chevra Kadisha that somebody's sitting Shiva, and you get a notice every single time someone dies that someone's sitting Shiva, and then it turns out like on today there's two or three people sitting Shiva, the next day there's 10 people, 20 people sitting Shiva, and the next day there's 50, 100 people sitting Shiva, that's going to have a significant negative psychological impact on you. And you're going to be profoundly scared and fearful that the plague is coming upon you. To such an extent, Akadekach, it's fascinating, they were aware, Chazal were aware of the mind-body connection, that if you yourself were in this state of fear, it would be more likely physiologically that you would contract a disease, contract plague, and it would be more likely that if you contracted plague that you would die of plague. So that's what B'Yasusa is. He was noted to accept that svara more than the other svaras. And these are just examples of verifying that in fact historically people didn't. So this is with Nathan Yosushal Nathanson Shola Meshiv, Ain Ish Holechanachem, Mishum Biasusa. Cholera is another thing you should know. Cholera together often means cholera. Cholera is cholera in the Tukuf Tzadi Aleph, which is the same as the Rabbi Kiva Eger, by the way, same exact color of plague. Nagu rabim shalole sheid b'avelus klal. No avelus. No zoom shiva. So even if they had zoom, according to the Svara, so the Nafkamina would be if you had zoom. If, according to Divya Malkiel, if the svara is for contagion, then a zoom shiva is appropriate. If the svara is for psychological reasons, that there's so many deaths, then even a zoom shiva should not be observed. And I know myself, you read there's so many patiras today. They had 50 pages of obituaries in one of the newspapers in the local Jewish newspapers, and it's disconcerting, and it does have a psychological impact. I just want to conclude. There was a citation. Let's see if I can find it. I apologize. If you bear with me one second, it's worth finding it. If I can find it on my slides here, I will. And again, I'm going to share all these slides with you. So even the slides that we didn't get a chance to go through, we will. You'll have all these slides. Let's see. I apologize here. See if I can find it. Ah, here we go. Okay. You guys can see this, right? I'm still on screen share. So this is from Leo Davidas, who is a Talmud of the Ramak, Rav Moshe Cordovero, and a Talmud of the Arizal. And this is what he wrote in the 1500s, and with this we'll conclude. He wrote, Magefa hishlucha me'ito yizbarach ba'avon oseinu mizman lizman. So sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us a magefa, a plague from time to time, Bavon Oseinu, Asher Yamus Bo Nar V'Zakein Tafin Oshim B'li Siba. So people die, young, old, men, women, children, and for reasons which we don't understand. U'b'chol Yizen Yizbal Bel Das HaRofim. And in this plague, whatever it may be, whenever it may be, in this periodic fashion, the physicians are befuddled, the physicians are confused. She'ein behem nisha yeda mitova adra. Nobody knows what's good to treat this disease, what's bad to treat this disease. And in fact, that exact statement could have been written today in the year 2020. Why, and you would think, wow, I mean, today we are the beneficiary of tremendous advances in medicine. We have vaccines, we have We have antibiotics. We should be afflicted with a plague. We shouldn't understand a disease. We should have a disease that scientists across the globe have no idea what's going on. Well, the answer is yes. We have no idea what's going on. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu injects humility even into us in the 21st century, despite our extraordinary advances in the world of medicine and how far we have come and all our tremendous understanding. We still don't know. We still have to appreciate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. We don't know if we take hydroxychloroquine or not. We don't know if we should put a patient in a respirator or not. We don't know how the disease is spread initially. But the good thing is that, you know, we have shown the contemporary and the past in all of these past plagues. Baruch Hashem, the Jewish community has survived. The Jewish community has continued to thrive. Mirtz Hashem, we should be zoche that this plague of this pandemic should be past tense. Mirtz Hashem, all those who are in need of refuah should have refuah. And Mirtz Hashem, next time we meet, we should be zoche not to meet via Zoom, but we should be able to meet by actual in-person discussion. So wishing you all a wonderful Shabbos.
Amen.
I'm happy to take questions if you guys have any questions. I don't know if you do, but...